And I'm the last one, so I get to speak as long as I want. Thanks all for coming to this session and making it successful. It makes it encouraging to keep trying to put it together. So I'm going to talk about not as long a term a study, chronosequences as we've seen, but it's not actually a chronosequence. We sampled these same places before disturbance, during, 1 year later, 2 years later, and then 7 years later, which was 2016. And this is sagebrush steppe grasslands that cover huge areas of the western U.S. The Great Basin used to be mostly this, and now it's mostly cheatgrass. Wyoming still has large areas of this sagebrush steppe grassland. Soils here are fairly shallow, and this is one time we didn't have to feel guilty about digging a huge soil pit because they came in the next day and started to excavate a pad for drilling a well. This soil, I think one of the, where is that? Somebody steal our pointer?
There it is.
Sorry, didn't mean to accuse anyone. This shows after a little snow and then melt when we were out here sampling pre-disturbance. But I think that one of the most important functions in this soil is that comes from that A horizon that might be only 3 to 5 centimeters thick. But it promotes infiltration and keeps those salts pushed down so that you get conditions for germination in that surface soil. I'm not really going to talk about that, but that's where a lot of our work has started, what we've started thinking about. The salvage and reclamation procedure, the first part is usually reference monitoring, inventory of the site, looking at the vegetation, and mapping out the salvageable topsoil. And then developing some kind of soil salvage plan. So in this example, this might be a ridge where they determined there was 0 inches of salvageable soil all the way down to 18 inches in this half. And so when they put everything back at 6 inches deep, you know, it's going to fit here. Sometimes they have leftover. Sometimes they bring it from somewhere else. These scrapers drive around in a circle, make a soil stockpile, and then a subsoil stockpile near that. They drill. That's the Wind River Range near the Pinedale Anticline. And then this is the same picture, but they do the same thing. They just take the soil off the stockpile and put it back on the site. And then they reseed it, and then we have interim reclamation, which is the reclamation that is on most of the well pad, and then they'll come back and do final when they close this well in 40 or 50 years, or however long. So our objective was to look at the short and medium-term effects of development reclamation on soil organic matter in particular for this study. This is a pretty big issue in Wyoming. This is, there's 121,000 some wells on file. This is a state soil map, and the green areas here are natrargid, so shallow to a natric horizon. You know, I guess what you'd call fragile soils, because if you mix up that sodium-rich B horizon into the surface, you've got some problems. These blue areas are salids, so you know, very fragile plant communities and soils. And the rest, you know, these are mostly Cretaceous shallow to Cretaceous shales in these basins where wells are especially concentrated. These are our three study sites: the Wamsutter Gas Field, the Jonah Field, and the Pinedale Anticline have been three of the most important production areas for natural gas. and they cover kind of an environmental gradient. Mean annual precipitation goes from 180 in Wamsutter to 276 in the Pinedale Anticline. And this is just, you know, pre-disturbance pH and organic matter in the surface horizon. I'll just show a couple pictures of what each of these sites look, or one picture of what each of these sites look like. Calcitic haplostyle. So I think this is one of the problems with taxonomy. To me, this is an erythrosol, it's not an alpha cell. It's just one of the, it happens to fall at that, near that boundary line. But the other thing I'd point out here is that these sites are fairly degraded. They've been subject to long-term grazing pressure for most of that period, pretty much uncontrolled grazing. They just turn them out. The Pinedale Anticline in particular is part of this, what do they call it, the drift, the Green Mountain Drift or something like that, where they come in the fall. They hit at the same time every year in the fall. And there's very few forbs, a lot of times very little herbaceous vegetation between the sagebrush plants. Even more stark at the Jonah Field, where it's a little drier. And then, And the driest site, the Wamsutter Field, this particular spot has a little bit bigger sagebrush, big sagebrush, but pretty intense crusting and very little vegetation in the interspaces. And this one is a erythrosol. So our study design looked kind of like this, where we dug a pit and then took 9 samples and bulked them on 3 pads at each of those 3 locations. And we did that starting with pre-disturbance, and then this is a year later. This picture from Google Earth shows a year later after interim reclamation. So pre-disturbance, we sampled that same soil when it was in the stockpile. Then we sampled that same soil again after they respread it. A year later, 2 years later, and 7 years later, for some reason my organic carbon and total nitrogen data vanished for year 2. In the stockpile, we went down to 250 centimeters in cores like this, or as deep as we could. It was pretty powdery, and you could feel the cold air come out of that. So it's dry and cold in those stockpiles. And that's a different talk, but really in a semi-arid environment, if you stockpile that soil dry, it doesn't do much. Length of time stockpiled, I don't think is a big deal. You lose some seed viability, but that's all. This shows sampling in the reference area, but that's what we did on the well pad as well. So we looked at, I'm not going to present any data here, just some pictures for vegetation cover, soil organic carbon and nitrogen, soil nitrate and ammonium, and then potentially mineralizable carbon and nitrogen by aerobic incubation. Just kind of during that first year, this is the Jonah site provided an especially good example. But in the undisturbed, so the nitrate, our PMN and nitrate concentration is on this side, and potentially mineralizable carbon concentration on this side. But in the undisturbed site, sagebrush steppe grasslands, some of that work out of Jeff Smith and the Pacific Northwest showed this ecosystem to be one of the most conservative with respect to the nitrogen cycle. Very little net nitrification. You won't find much mineral nitrogen in an undisturbed sagebrush steppe grassland. In the stockpile, you know, we crushed up all that sagebrush and ground up the soil structure. We got a jump in the PMN and PMC and a little jump here. When we respread it, I think that's when we really get a disturbance effect and a big jump in nitrate and at the expense of the PMN and PMC. And then 1 year later, that nitrate has gone. Guess where? Weeds. Weeds do pretty well here, and they used to fertilize these things until I started showing them this data a few years back. I won't take all the credit, but they really did stop fertilizing when they say, "Well, we're already getting 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre just from that disturbance effect," and no wonder Halogeton is so happy. So the vegetation. Year 2011, so this is 2 years out, and then in 2016, we were shocked when we went back there. I thought, you know, nothing's going to grow, but all three of the sites, really, sagebrush came in, the planted bunch grasses and forbs. So I started looking at the study period precipitation, and it was wetter towards the end, the last part of the study period, but not too impressive, unless you look at fall precip, especially at those two sites. We got a lot more fall precip towards the end of the study period. I think that vegetation just really started coming on. And so looking at soil organic carbon with that missing year two data, or without that missing year two data, we see so this was a time by location interaction. The Anticline and the Jonah, so this is the wettest site and the in-between site, kind of had the same pattern where 1 year after, it really sort of, stimulating mineralization really had an effect, and then it actually bounced back to more than the original amount of soil carbon that was in that degraded sagebrush steppe plant community. And this one looks like started to rebound, but it's a drier site. Wamsutter was a little more confusing. There is some low-grade coal mixed in with that overburden and topsoil, so we think we just see some things that are hard to explain. Looking at nitrate, we get that huge bump. This is 0 to 20 centimeters depth. Huge bump that comes back down to more what you'd expect in that ecosystem. Mineralizable nitrogen looks like it starts to recover 7 years out in all the sites to different magnitudes, but all the sites had the same pattern. Potentially mineralizable carbon looks a little slower, so starting to recover after 7 years. And I think that's because it's taken a while for soil structure to recover, and soil structure is important for protecting this mineralizable pool. So compared with these reference sites that were already degraded, and if I had really realized the extent that we were looking at degraded sites to what I think they are now, I may have looked for some exclosures or something. It's hard to find real reference sites in these areas that aren't affected by long-term grazing. There's more herbaceous vegetation, more diversity in these reclaimed plant communities once it starts to rain and actually grow. So that could explain some of this organic matter recovery that I didn't really expect until I went back. PMC is recovering more slowly, possibly due to that loss of soil structure. And soil structure protects organic matter from mineralization. And that's how did I do? Time for questions? It's a portion of the carbon pool that takes up anywhere, and how we measure it. We put a soil sample that's been disturbed by sampling it, in a jar, put it at optimal moisture, about field capacity, for 2 weeks. And day 1, 7, and 14, we pull a sample out of the jar through a septum with a syringe, and we measured CO2 in that. And then after we sample each time, we vent the jar so we get the accumulation for that period. And so it represents the amount of carbon that would mineralize, that's mineralizable. We could say mineralize over a growing season, but you know, we don't really know that. It's an assay for that particular pool of carbon. And it takes up, what, can somebody say 1% or so of the total organic carbon pool? And the more protection there is, like if it's anaerobic, the more mineralizable carbon will accumulate there. Any other questions? Are you guys all from the forest? So you
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
We do have time if there are questions for the speakers. We do have a few minutes before the poster session starts, so if people have questions for any of the speakers now. And if not, yeah?
So, I'm kind of surprised that so many of these sites are really looking only at surface. Particularly your data, I mean, you looked below, but you really didn't see any roots down there?
You mean, below, in the
0 to 15.
Yeah, no, there were roots. There were just very few.
Widely distributed.
Right. Yeah. Well, so that's true, but I mean, the forests and the agricultural fields have the same sampling intensity and the same sampling methodology. I mean, if there was a root, it would either I imagine, the chance of hitting it. Right. It finding and quantifying roots, as you mentioned earlier, is no easy thing to do. But we also excavated 3 soil pits in this ag field complex. And so that's what I showed real briefly, a kind of a messy scatter plot going down. And it showed this kind of same pattern of even at the surface that the agriculture fields seem to have fewer roots. And once you got below a meter, there were effectively none.
Yeah, but particularly in the old field pine forest, and I'm just surprised there was more activity there.
Yeah, no, most of the stuff I showed was from one replication. We got 3 paired comparisons, you know, many kilometers apart to see the exact same thing again. It's worth noting that the B horizon is a meter and a half, 2 meters thick in some places, just chock full of clay, and if you destroy the pore networks to get through it, you're going to have a heck of a hard time and maybe need hundreds of years to actually get all the way back through the knee horizon if you destroy the pore networks that previously allowed roots to get that deep end of the profile.
But that CO2 is accumulating from respiration.
Yeah.
So that indicates there's roots down there.
It's
not diffusing out, though. That's what I wondered. It's really accumulating at high concentrations.
Yeah, we all think in two parts of the data we show. There's some really interesting patterns, and the reason is because it wasn't necessarily fitting with this box. This wasn't only a soil CO2 box. We have another, the first year, so this is the second year of gas data. There's a first year of data. We had Hurricane Harvey, where we just had deluge after deluge for about a month. And somehow, whether it's CO2 dissolution and flushing laterally out of the system, or equilibrium between barometric pressure above ground and below ground that affected flow out, I think both are happening. We see a plummet in CO2 all the way down to 5 meters when you have 30 rainstorms in a row. So the system does get reset, but it needs a resetting force to get
pushing the CO2 out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have I think we too often think about roots as this asymptotic decline. Like in, so I do a lot of work in Piedmont too. If a root makes it through that BT, then when they get down, I see all the time that they just proliferate like crazy sitting on top of the saprolite layer where water perches. And so you'll have root biomass or surface area length, whatever, decline, and then all of a sudden you get down to some depth and wham, it comes back again. So you get, it's a valid point, but I think we've all been drinking too much of Rob's Kool-Aid. That the trade-offs of more intensive surface sampling relative to going to depth, it's question dependent. What is always gained by a 3-4 meter feet if you can only do one or two?
Yeah, but Kim will tell you the same thing. There's roots down there.
Oh,
we're doing important things.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying there's not as many. There are not as many roots down there in these younger forests. We get through the V horizon, 3 meters, 2 meters deep, and then we've got another 7 meters at least of steep, sandy, coarse sea horizon. And I mean, in some places you can go 30 meters before you hit bedrock. Like our soils are amazingly deep, never glaciated. They're beautiful basalt. The deepest hole I've augered is 10 meters by hand, and past meter five, occasionally you find a root. Occasionally. But how can you quantify that with any statistical power? We know that they're there, but have no idea their distribution or
Right. Is mineralization we were just talking about this recently. Is mineralization slowed down there? Do roots accumulate down there? Or does organic matter accumulate from roots, or why not?
Yeah, so we carbon dated.